What's going on, everyone? Welcome to Sports from the Six, episode 10. Man, I can't even believe I'm saying that when we started this. I did not think we'd get this far so quickly.
Double digits.
We're out here.
Alongside my team, as always, Flip Livingstone, Dwayne Turner, behind the scenes, Stacy Deshaun, who will also join us on air today for a little bit of action.
Bang,
what's going
bang.
On, everyone?
Just happy to be here, guys. You know, just happy to be here talking sports with some of my favorite people. And it's a great time of the year to be a sports fan. And, you know, it's happy to be alive.
Just to play off what you just said, Flip, I mean, we got a huge weekend coming up in terms of sports, and I cannot wait.
Huge weekend indeed.
Speaking of the huge weekend, let's get going right off the jump. There's been some pretty good puck action that we've seen lately.
Very excellent puck.
The first round ended last night with the Tampa Bay Lightning squeaking by the Detroit Red Wings. A really, really good series. Guys, heading into round two now, what are your thoughts? What are your feelings? Flip, I'm very sorry. Apologies. Nashville Predators are
it's,
no more.
It's okay. You know what? I have one of my predictions intact. Montreal Canadiens looking like the real deal right now.
Your new favorite team, right?
My new favorite team. Go Habs, go.
This is terrible.
This is the state of the union, boys. We're in Toronto, and it's go Habs, go time, okay? So you know how I feel about it. We don't need to talk about it any more than that. It's, you know what, at the end of the day, NHL playoffs is always great puck. And maybe we haven't seen a bunch of game sevens in the first round. There was only two, I believe. So in terms of close games, there weren't as many. Some overtime games, but still exciting hockey to watch. And I look at the matchups in round two, and I think the excitement for fans is going to continue. Still got two Canadian teams in it, which is also keeps Canadian fans enticed. I don't know if you guys have been looking at the second round matchups, but first off, Calgary's in tough against Anaheim. I look at that first of all. And the second matchup that entices me the most is Rangers Capitals.
It's going to be a great series.
Meeting in the playoffs for the fifth time in six seasons. They know each other well. That's going to be a great series. And I'm really looking forward to round two kicking off.
Yeah, I look at it, and you look at a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning. They just squeak by
right.
the Detroit Red Wings. And to me, that series provides a lot of intrigue because Tampa Bay owned them during the regular season.
Right.
They won all of the meetings between them. But now you get a chance. It's playoffs. It's Carey Price, the potential MVP, Hart Trophy winner.
Yeah.
How are you going to be able to game plan for him? And in terms of Montreal, how are you going to slow down those Tampa forwards who haven't shown as much in the playoffs, but we know that they're a team that goes nine deep, really, with their forward core.
Yeah, you bring up a great point because, I mean, Stamkos hasn't really shown up yet. He hasn't scored a goal, or he didn't score a goal in the first round.
Right.
But they've been getting great contribution from everybody else. And in terms of Montreal, I'll be interested to see what the rest of, like, some of the bigger names on their bigger name forwards. Like, I've been kind of shocked that it's been the lesser names that have come through for them. And Carey Price, I mean, he's been unbelievable. That last game, that game six against Ottawa, I mean, that was closing seconds
right.
of the game where he was making save after save to make sure that...
He's amazing.
It was incredible.
He continues
Absolutely
to impress.
Incredible.
And it started for me when I was really a believer of Carey Price's, the pressure that was on him in the Olympics. And as much as, don't get me wrong, that Team Canada was stacked. We might not know how good that team was because of how dominant they were in the Olympics, and I know we're going back a bit, but Carey Price stood on his head in that tournament. And this kid, and relative, I still feel comfortable calling him a kid because he's still in, he's in his mid-20s. And in my opinion, the top of the goaltending class in the league right now, I would not be surprised at all if he wins the Hart. I think he's very deserving of it. He continues to impress me with, he just looks like he's got ice in his veins. We've talked about youngsters on the show like Jordan Spieth having ice in his veins and not showing his age. Carey Price only a few years older. As much as I think Montreal does have a deep team, this is Carey Price's team right now. And if I'm Tampa Bay, if I had trouble scoring on Peter Mrazek, who had a great series, and I'm not taking anything away from him, if I see Carey Price coming into town, regardless of the regular season stats, which in my opinion don't really mean anything in the playoffs, shout out the Toronto Raptors one time, the Montreal Canadiens win in six games against Tampa is my prediction.
Wow.
Okay. I guess I want to talk about the other series that we haven't mentioned yet. And we got the Blackhawks and Wild.
Yes.
Right.
Should be an interesting one. Both of them were the lower seeds and still made it through to the second round.
Right.
It's going to be interesting because the Blackhawks, they go back to Corey Crawford, after Scott Darling was actually quite impressive in the first round series. And you've got Devin Dubnyk on the other side, who, this might not be a popular opinion, but I thought maybe he could have been a Hart Trophy finalist himself because he had an incredible season.
Yeah, that's fair, for sure. Could have been.
I mean, he was really behind Price and almost like right behind Price in every statistical category. So it's going to be interesting to see how those play out, whether he can stop the very potent Chicago Blackhawks offense.
Yeah.
And whether or not the Wild can keep it going and see if they can chase Corey Crawford once again.
I think when I look at that series, I think this is going to be Devin Dubnyk's first real test now in the playoffs. Of course, he was fantastic.
We'll see what he's made of now.
Right. And St. Louis, yes, they're a good hockey team, but they've been bounced in the first round now. How many years that they just get to the playoffs, they seem to be built for the regular season.
San Jose-esque.
Yeah, San Jose-esque, exactly. And really now, for the Blackhawks, there's a few things that I really like. One, Patrick Kane coming back. 7 points in that six-game series.
Right.
That's huge. That's arguably your best player now, your best scorer back in the lineup. That's huge for them. Another thing that they've done is they've separated their key pairing. They've separated Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook to play with Michael Roosevelt and Kimmo Tiiminen. So you have now a little bit more depth and balance there on defense. But I expect this series to be a bit of a long series. I think Minnesota plays really well at home. That arena is just electric. And same for Chicago. So these are two very good hockey teams. And for me, Dwayne, I'm happy you brought that up because I think this is a series to watch here in the second round.
Yeah, it's interesting because these are two traditional American hockey markets. So when I look at it from an overall NHL perspective, I like to see these markets in the playoffs going deep to kind of expand the game a little bit in terms of more people watching it. I think it's a dream matchup for American hockey stations and sports stations alike. I personally don't think it's going to be as close as you think, and that's not a knock on Minnesota. It's just Quinville, Taze, Kane, Sharp, Hossa, Keith,
it's a very good team.
Seabrook. You know, we could even continue. That team, when you say depth, you could look up Chicago in the dictionary and it would be there. But, you know, Stanley Cup playoffs is awesome, and I still think Montreal is my favorite at this point. Rangers Montreal in the East Final could be a very good possibility, as well as Anaheim Chicago in the West.
I'm completely with you on both those predictions.
All right, so to move on to our next topic, we got the NFL draft. A huge, huge night. No other sport garners the kind of attention where you can have a draft in primetime like this. And I don't know what you guys think, but I think this is going to be a very entertaining draft. I mean, I think everybody kind of knows what the consensus number one pick will be.
Right.
Most people have Jameis Winston, Florida State quarterback, going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as the number one pick. And after that, I think all hell breaks loose at number two. That's when deals could be made. Anything could happen. And as a Philadelphia Eagles fan, I have a feeling I'm going to be highly...
He's got the Eagles jersey on right
why?
Now.
Why are you wearing
just
that?
So you know, he's got the jersey on.
You know what? They've put me through some turmoil these past few months, the amount of trades, but I support them.
Are you not They're sad? Thinking, do you not like cry when you're like, man, I'm an Eagles fan?
Well, we're just plagued by teams that just, you know, take their fans through the runner every season.
You know what? It's I've just gotten to the point where I've just kind of been desensitized to everything. I just let it happen. I mean, this tonight
just
is
let
gonna
it
be,
wash over you, Dwayne.
Tonight's going to be different. Like this jersey, there's a good chance it might not be in the same condition it is right now. So
we talked jersey burning,
but we'll see how it goes. What are you guys' opinion on the draft?
Yeah, it's such a spectacle, and I look at it as I'm a huge NFL fan, but it still blows me away the magnitude of something as much as it's a draft.
Yeah.
You know, and I get it. The NFL is a big deal, but I'm still shocked at how much attention it gets. And, you know, I'm even excited, and I realistically don't have a team that I follow as closely as you do. I'm just an overall NFL football fan, and I love Sundays for it. But it's just, you know, it's impressive, the magnitude of everything. And, you know, we've talked about the storyline. The main storyline is clear. The quarterbacks at 1 and 2, Winston and Mariota. You know, I think at this point, I really don't see Tampa passing on Winston. But in the back of their minds, they've got to be concerned about the off-field antics. And I don't know what you guys feel about it personally, but the NFL, we don't need to talk about it. It's been plagued by off-field issues up and down. So as much as I see him as the best on-field talent for a quarterback. If I was personally picking, I know I've said I think Winston will go first. If I was picking, that off-field stuff is too much of a risk for me these days. And I know he's come out and said that's behind him and he's ready to play, but that's a huge concern for me. I don't know what you guys think about that one.
All I can say is, in the words of Drake, draft day.
Oh, jeez, here we go.
Johnny Manziel.
Oh, God.
No, I look at this draft and the excitement around it. It just builds for what's going to be a great, great weekend in
right.
sports. And I look at the Tennessee Titans, and I wonder, are they going to keep that pick? Like, there's been a lot of theories. Dwayne has been mathematically planning it through his head that the Philadelphia Eagles are going to get that second overall pick. And for a team like that, it comes down to, what are you going to do with Zach Mettenberg? You know,
right.
he took over the role of the quarterback position there last year. They had a terrible record, 2-14.
Yeah.
That team has high praise for that quarterback.
Yeah, no, they do.
They really think he's the real deal. I heard him, speaking of your Roethlisbergers, I heard them comparing him to a quarterback like Roethlisberger.
Very similar.
I think I read that last week.
For those that don't know, I'm wearing a Pittsburgh Steelers shirt simply because it
peep
was
the Twitter
a
account for the latest. Peep the Twitter account
yeah,
for
the
latest,
Twitter
please.
And
Ken follow back.
Ken Wisenhunt, he likes him. He likes Mettenberg. So
yeah.
I can see them moving that pick. It's going to be interesting, the flurry of activity. There's a lot of other guys as well that there is interest in. Leonard Williams is
yes.
one of the guys that comes to mind
yep.
as well. Someone that the Jaguars could target, Amari Cooper. There are guys there. So
yeah.
it's not just ingrained in those two quarterbacks, but obviously when you have two quarterbacks as talented as that duo, that's
right.
going to be the story of the NFL draft.
I'm glad you bring up Leonard Williams because he might actually be the best overall player in the draft. I mean, he's a versatile defensive lineman who can either play as a 3-4 defensive end or 4-3 defensive tackle. He's incredible. Some people have kind of criticized maybe his ability to stay healthy, but some of the tape that I've seen of this guy, like he's an absolute beast, you know, coming out of USC. So we'll see. You brought up some of the locations he could go to. Amari Cooper's a great example of another great talent.
Yep.
Like Kevin White is actually kind of in some mock drafts is actually going ahead of him, but Amari Cooper, he's the safe pick at wide receiver. He's a guy who, you know, he's been the best player on Alabama for a while now, and
right.
it's going to be very interesting to see what he does, where he gets drafted.
Yeah, and personally, after the first two guys, Winston and Mariota, I think the guy that intrigues me the most is Cooper. Watching highlights the past few days, that looks like a receiver that's got explosive talent. Like you said, he's been killing it for the Crimson Tide in Alabama, and personally, I think he's definitely has what it takes to step right into the NFL and make an impact.
And another interesting little tidbit is the fact that no running back has actually been taken in the first round since 2012. And
right.
this year, I think that's going to change. I think there are
yeah.
some very talented runners in this draft. There are two for sure that I think will be taken in the first round, and that's going to be Melvin Gordon out of Wisconsin
mm-hmm.
or Todd Gurley from
Georgia.
Yeah. And
there
are a few others that could maybe sneak into the end of the first round, but those two definitely. I just feel there are some teams that are lacking a good, productive runner. Arizona
right.
comes to mind, Dallas after they ended up losing DeMarco Murray.
Yeah.
So you could see them maybe making moves to get them. And I got to say, Todd Gurley, I know Melvin Gordon gets all the attention because of his he was a Heisman Trophy finalist after all. But
right.
Todd Gurley, I know he's coming off of a torn ACL, I believe. But he was incredible. I mean, he was actually leading in terms of Heisman votes before he got hurt. He was an incredible talent.
Yeah, impressive for sure.
I can't wait to see him once he gets into the league.
Yeah, it's interesting to talk about the role of the running back in the NFL, and it's kind of been a running back by committee, even some teams having two or three different backs and they rotate the ball throughout.
The changing of a guard.
Right, and it is a pass-heavy league still, but I think Dwayne's on to something in terms of them drafting a running back this high and maybe going back to more of a run game in terms of overall in the NFL, and I could see that happening slowly. Don't get me wrong, the pass-heavy offense isn't going anywhere, but I think a sign like a guy like Todd Gurley coming up from Georgia is a perfect example of teams starting to maybe want to go back to the run game. So we'll see. And, you know, I don't know how many people tune into these things, but it's going to be in the 20 or 30 million mark. So I'm excited to watch it.
I know for sure Dwayne Turner, you cannot, I'm not even going to text Dwayne throughout the night because I know what he's going to be doing.
He's going to be sitting in front of his Chip Kelly shrine.
Hey.
He's going to have all his remotes lined up like the guy in Silver Linings Playbook. And he's going to, you know, be praying to the Chip Kelly gods.
I can just see Dwayne having one of those Eagles shrines, like, you know, in Hey Arnold, where there was Helga and she had that big gum shrine. I'm telling you, I'm near convinced at this point that Dwayne Turner has something similar.
For some of our younger viewers, you can Google Hey Arnold. Great show. Shout out Hey Arnold and YTV one time.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
I will neither confirm or deny any of those things.
Speaking of something that's not as fun, we talked about this last week. The Toronto Raptors swept away. Mm-hmm. We have Stacey Deshaun, our behind the scenes, joining us now to also talk a little bit of hoop. What's going on, Stacey? Thanks
Hi,
for joining us.
Thanks for the welcome. I know I'm usually behind the scenes, but it's good to be on air for this time. So
welcome, Stacey.
Thanks for having me.
And since you're on air for the first time, I think we just, you know, thank you so much for being behind the scenes all the time and helping us.
Absolutely.
And you know, I'm honored to have you speak on air, so thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, and shout out to Jess Patton too, who helps behind the scenes.
For sure. Shout out Jess.
Shout out J-Pats.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's you know, we got bounced in four straight, guys. It was we were all so excited for this series, and the city just you know, I've talked about it, and I don't want to get into it too much. You know, Paul Pierce is still upsetting me. His trolling skills, side note, his trolling skills are on point, though. This guy has been, like, mastering the troll. If you haven't seen his social media accounts, please check out Paul Pierce on Twitter, because not only did he kill us on the court, he killed us in the social media world as well. But
No chill.
I'm sure we're all on the same page in terms of this series. It was embarrassing, flat out.
I hate to
say
I told you so, but
it was flat out embarrassing. And I watched the post season press conference with these players, and first guy out is Grievous Vasquez, and he takes ownership for them not playing well. But at the end of the day, who wears it? Is it the players? Is it Dwayne Casey? Is it Masai? I don't know what you guys think. I personally don't think the answer is firing the coach, but I think we should start with that. Do you guys think Should Casey get the axe? What do you guys think?
To me, I mean, there's been a lot of flack on Casey for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, he does have his downfall. There's a lot of rumors in respect to why JJ hasn't been playing.
Right.
Obviously, in the offseason, there's going to be a lot of changes, and they're kind of Masai is obviously evaluating whether or not Casey will stay. Let's be real. Even though he's not saying that outright. However, I think that there has to be that ownership on DeRozan as well as Lowry.
For sure.
When Lowry came out at the beginning of the season, he was strong, he was fit. Whereas, as you can tell, by the end of the season, he just kind of fell flat and his game wasn't there. So I think in the off season, he has to take ownership of his game, make sure that he's fit enough to play, make sure that he, you know, he kind of takes that leadership role as well as DeRozan, because DeRozan has been a crucial part of the Raptors franchise.
100%. Yep.
And so for him, I think that they need to work on defense, especially work as a team.
Agreed.
Which didn't happen at all during the Wizards series. So
I don't know if you guys noticed this in the quotes between Coach Casey and Lowry, but there seems to be a bit of a disconnect there again.
For sure.
Lowry was like, I respect him as a man and whatnot. He didn't really praise the X's and O's, the coaching skills. And Casey said that Lowry needs to get back into better shape. So they've had issues before. Clearly, Kyle Lowry is the straw that stirs this drink. He needs to be 100%.
Yeah. And there's two things I quickly want to mention. I agree with you 100%, Stacey. That DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry are the leaders of this team on the floor. And you know, DeMar had a good game three, but was invisible the rest of the time. Kyle Lowry has been the savior of this team, if you will, for a little bit. You know, Faisal talked about it last week. This is a team that went last season who we were expecting them to tank for Wiggins to making it to third place in the conference.
Shout out to the rookie of the year, Wiggins, by the way.
Yeah,
shout out Andrew Wiggins. Big congrats to Wiggins, which is awesome for NBA basketball.
And putting
Canada
on the map for sure.
But yeah, so in terms of the Raptors, it's like, I don't know. I've kind of lost my train of thought there, but it's okay. We'll get back on it. I'll get a water in me.
Draft day is going through his head now, all the Johnny Manziel and Wiggins talk. So
exactly. So, but it's that. There's that. That's number one. Those two need to man up and own their mistakes. And I think they have a little bit in the press conference, but where you start to own it is winning next season.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it starts. And number two thing that I quickly wanted to mention, and I think hit home for me hardest from watching all these press conferences, is what Dwayne Casey said about the team. He said that he recognized early on in the season that their style of play, yes, it was winning games, but he knew in the long run in his head, and this is what he said, that it wasn't going to bode well long term for success, especially playoff basketball.
But see, when I look at that, I'm like, you're the coach, right?
Right.
And he said we tried everything. However, even as fans, I know we're not on the bench every day, but we saw things tactically that we could do differently. And I think that's what I also heard from Masai. He didn't come out and directly endorse Dwayne Casey and say Dwayne Casey's going to be back. He said it's a process. Sometimes we get kicked in the face in the process. So I do think that Masai is going to evaluate this.
Right.
He's going to see, okay, he has two options here now. You can either fire the coach and bring in another coach now, or you have $29 million in cap space to spend this offseason. Are you going to use it to build a roster that better suits what Dwayne Casey wants to do?
Yeah, and I guess why I mentioned those comments that I just did is it raises a red flag to me. It's the man recognizes a flaw in his team, but yet doesn't do anything about it. And I know it's easier said than done to just make a change in your team, like play better offense, play better defense, and it's easier said than done. But if you recognize the fact that you think your team isn't playing successful basketball long term, I don't understand why you don't make a change. So it raises a red flag for me there. But at the same time, I don't think he should be fired.
Mm-hmm. And
I like Dwayne Casey as a coach.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think the perfect example of that would be Jonas Valanciunas. You know, they always complain that he doesn't have the time in terms of developing in the key. And sometimes when you need that experience, you need him to, you know, to make those decisions. I think that he pulls them at the wrong time. That's what I've observed, personally speaking,
right,
throughout the season. And so I think with JV, I mean, he's a good example of where Dwayne Casey kind of, I don't know, he was kind of indecisive. I think that if he does return for the next season, he has to make those crucial decisions in developing his current roster, of the roster of the players that are actually staying.
Okay, so I'm just going to sneak in here, and I just wanted to throw in a few stats.
You're sneaky, Dwayne. I like that about you.
Hey, man. So there are a few things that I feel, and I, don't get me wrong. I mean, the Raptors, they've already gone through it. I don't want to continue to bury them, but
we can, though.
A couple stats that really jumped out at me. The Wizards led by double digits for 69 minutes of this series.
Wow. Yep. Great stat.
While the Raptors.
Stats. Great stat.
That's right. While the Raptors only had a lead for 53 minutes in the series.
Wow.
Any lead.
It's tough because you look at the way the Raptors started this season, right? And they were used to being that team that would get that double digit lead.
Right.
Right? And that's where I evaluate Casey, and I'm like, this is the second time now that you fail to dictate the series in any way possible. And that's what makes it tough. Yes, Stacey brought up the thing with JV, how he doesn't get those minutes. And you almost feel like it's at a point now where you have to make a decision for this guy's development. Is this guy going to develop to what you want him to be under this coach? Clearly so far, it's been really slow.
He's taken a lot of heat for the development of Valanciunas, and I think it's because maybe, you know, Raptors fans waited for this guy. So that's one thing. You know, the patience might not be there in terms of, you know, we've already, as a fan base, waited for a player to come into the league. And second of all, he just has flashes of brilliance. He looks amazing. And then other times I see him pump fake and I'm like, oh my God, please don't shoot it. Please put it on the floor. So it's a coin flip for me with JV. One day he looks amazing. The other day it's like, oh my God, play in the D League. So it's interesting. But so you were saying a few things about Casey there. Okay, do you think he should be fired or do you think he should stay?
Honestly, to me, I think it's going to depend on the roster makeup. And I know you guys may think
interesting. So that's a bit of a cop-out.
Maybe. But with so much money to spend,
Dwayne, so you're saying wait and see then, maybe?
Wait and see because, okay, so for me, the way I would build a team is you only replace something if there's a tangible upgrade.
Right.
If Tom Thibodeau, a guy like that's not on the market, if there's not an improvement to be made over Dwayne Casey, why are you going to fire a guy and bring in a guy who could even set the process back further? You've built something here. I will say this. As much as I don't like his coaching, the truth is, in terms of wins and losses, the Raptors have got better every single season.
Exactly.
That Dwayne Casey has been at the helm.
And, you know, we've talked about GMs in any league of the major four leagues these days. It's a what have you done for me lately kind of mentality in terms of winning. You know, we saw it with Shirelli in the NHL with the Bruins. You know, the Bruins are a perennial playoff team, won the cup a couple years ago, and he's fired. Now he's in Edmonton within a couple days. But it just goes to show you the mentality of sports these days. And I think that there's a short leash on Casey now. As much as I really like Masai and I do trust in Masai, I think there's a short leash on him now. And I really think that management has to wear this one a bit because they stood by this team. They brought back the exact same team, Lou Williams, huge addition. Other than that, the exact same team. And speaking of money, Lou Williams is going to get paid, guys. Sixth man of the year?
Yeah, no, he is going to get paid. And that's the thing. The thing with the Raptors this year is they had a lot of offensive weapons. They clearly had no problem scoring the ball. But in the playoffs, their schemes were very rudimentary. They were very basic, right? And for a coach, eventually you have to develop offensive schemes that suit your players in half-court possessions and in transition. The Raptors failed to do that. If Dwayne Casey does get fired, okay, one name to keep an eye on for me is Alvin Gentry, a guy that's coached before. He works well with offensive players. It's just going to depend on the type of system that they go with. And Flip, all your points are very valid. Sports is a what have you done for me lately industry.
Right.
And just to add to what you're saying earlier about changing the roster, I agree. I think that we need to add veterans of the game to contribute in a significant way on the floor. And we need more bigs. I mean, JV is potentially, he is the big that we rely on. And is he developed in compared to the other bigs in the league? No, definitely not. I think we need more bigs that can protect the rim and pick and roll in terms of defense.
Right, yeah. Killed us. We talked about it last week.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then just even in terms of JV, he needs to work on his decision-making in the post on offense. And this kind of goes back to what you said, what have you done for me lately? He obviously didn't have those decision-making skills in the key during this entire playoff run. So. Yeah,
he can't get out of the post.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that you can kind of tell in his hesitation. You can't zoom in, but you can tell that he hesitates in terms of...
He lacks confidence, for sure.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that goes to show that we do need a veteran or we do need another big that can, you know, boost up the team and boost up JV to get him to where he needs to be.
And I think, we forget, he's still 22 years old. Yes. So, I mean, he has time to develop. It's just...
Right.
Is it going to fit with this current timeline of players, and can you still compete?
He has time to development. This unit of players does not.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry's over 30 now. I mean, this guy is not a young player. So you've got to decide, what are you going to do? And it's going to be a very interesting...
Dwayne's bursting at the seams here. What do you got to say, Dwayne? I'm excited.
No. So I just wanted to kind of take a look at the future now, because obviously we know that things have to change.
Yep.
Ali, you brought up the cap room, and that's actually dependent on whether or not they decide to bring back some of these guys. And a few of the free agents, we've got Landry Fields, Tyler Hansborough, Chuck Hayes, Amir Johnson, Greg Stiesma, and Lou Williams, sixth man of the year.
Everyone.
I'm going to say every player just mentioned.
Sorry, I just want... You said bye-bye everyone. Are you saying that Greg Stiesma is out the door?
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know I don't know how we're going to live
Mamba?
Without the Stiesma era.
The White Mamba? I'm calling him the White Mamba. But I agree with AK. I think everyone except Lou will not be back.
I don't even think Lou will. I don't think they can afford him.
I think Amir might be back under a short term deal with significantly less money. Mm-hmm. Amir has built his heart here in Toronto.
Stacey brought it up, a great point about the lack of size. Mm-hmm. And I think they have to be patient with JV, because, you know, if you give up on him, another team's going to snap him up in a second. And I don't think it's the time to bail on that project just yet.
And how high is his value? You don't even know that right now.
Right. I think is the most glaring need is at power forward, and we don't have any size. And you said it again with veteran leadership. I think it would be a great fit to pick up a veteran power forward with some size, because as much as I love Amir Johnson, he loves Toronto. He's a great heart and soul guy. He's not big enough on the boards. He has offensive upside, but I feel like, and it goes to show you for the whole team, they lack the defensive skill on the defensive end of the floor. And I just think there's no opposing force down there that's like, I'm not going to drive the lane. Guys attack the hoop aggressively. John Wall slashed the you-know-what out of the Raptors' defense, because who's going to stop him at the rim? Nobody. That's who.
Yeah, and I think with Amir, he's one of the team's, if not the team's, best overall defender. And I think that we can definitely acquire a stronger veteran, like you said. I mean, Amir has his injury issues as well that we have to consider. Right, and so that was a downfall in his Toronto career. So
yeah,
sad to say, he has a lot of heart, but I think he's out.
He's in his 20s still.
Injuries are one thing, but they're not excuses, you know. And like, I feel for the guys if they're playing through injuries, but at the end of the day, it's W's and championships that count, and there's none of those going up on the board. So I think that changes will be made, and I just hope that, you know, the front court is addressed immediately and first of all.
Paul Millsap.
I would have to agree with that cough, Allie.
I was just going to say, yeah, I agree. There are a few players that I was kind of looking at that, you know, are going to be potential free agents, whether restricted or not. And Paul Millsap is a great example of somebody who could be brought in. And Al Jefferson is somebody who could also be brought in. He has a player option, so he could opt into that. But I think a very underrated move that the Raptors could make is maybe bring in, I know he's a restricted free agent, but like a Tobias Harris, somebody like that. I mean, he's a very young and great player for the Orlando Magic. And to have him come in, and I don't know what the future with Terrence Ross is, but if he could maybe come in and play that three position, I think that would be a huge upgrade. And I mean, again, he's a restricted free agent, so who knows what could happen, but he's another guy who you could bring in. A Greg Monroe. I know New York and LA are going to pay a fortune to get that guy.
I think that'd be a great fit in Toronto.
And Andre Drummond, I know, again, another guy who he's a rim protector and he gobbles up rebounds.
He's going to get paid.
If I'm not mistaken, he went after Terrence Ross in the draft too, I think. I think they passed up on him. So I mean,
that was a mistake.
You know, I don't want to beat this to death because we should move on to another topic, but the whole thing with the Raptors and drafting is a whole other issue. And we could probably sit here and talk about it for a while, all the crazy off-the-board picks that they have made. And, you know, we've had Jim Taddy in here talking about a player like Caboclo, and they're taking players that are 4 and 5 years away, and it just goes to show me even more that the management needs to wear this a little bit, because they've clearly put so much confidence into what they have on the floor that they're not even drafting to think to change the lineup. So mentality is going to have to change here.
So the only thing is that I would say to that is because I think the mindset, because when he was drafted, obviously
right.
The team, the fans were fixated on this possibility that the Raptors were ready to compete right now. And right. We know that Masai was he was getting ready to blow up the team, right? So he could be something, I understand, like, you know, 2 years from 2 years or whatever they said he is. But he could be somebody that could be, you know, fostering and getting ready to play eventually because, again, I personally don't know what's going to happen to this team and what they're going to look like come the 2015-2016 season. So maybe they're rebuilding, and maybe that plays up to what they have in the future.
And guys, just I guess a quick thing to sum it up. By the way, Andre Drummond was drafted 9th after Terrence Ross. But yeah, and Masai talked about this. He's looking to buy a D-League team. So the Raptors are looking to purchase a D-League team, their own D-League affiliate. The reason you didn't see Bruno and Bebe with the Mad Ants this year is just because they don't control the development down there. They don't control the coaching. And
Bruno was there a little bit.
He was, but
couple
he,
games,
except for one game where he played a lot. He
right.
barely played
yeah.
on the farm, and that's because they don't control the coaching in that environment. So they want Bruno and Bebe to be in an atmosphere where they can grow to a system similar to the Toronto Raptors' current system down in the NBA on the Major League team. So I guess we'll wrap it up with that in terms of the Raptors. It's definitely going to be an interesting offseason, and we'll see. We'll see what Masai does. He gets paid for this. This is why he's the GM and we're in the booth. So I guess we'll see really
yeah.
what happens.
And you know what? Speaking of waiting and seeing, I'm super excited for the second round of the NBA playoffs in general. One of the matchups that's already solidified is Memphis at Golden State. And we talked about it a little bit before the show. I've been on record to say that I think Golden State Warriors are the class of the year this year, and I do think they're the team to beat. Also, shout out Steph Curry. I also believe that he's the MVP. You know, we could sit here and probably have a whole MVP show dedicated to who we think is the MVP. I don't know how competitive Memphis can be against Golden State. I don't personally think they match up well against the team. I don't know what you guys think about that. You guys are more of the basketball heads, technically. I think Golden State deals with them in 6 games, 4-2. I don't know what you guys think of that.
I think
Golden
State's going to take them in 5 or 6 games.
Yeah.
I agree.
I don't think they'll have a problem there. I think Memphis is going to have a tough time guarding the 1-4 pick and roll.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think they'll have a tough time guarding the 3 as well. They've had a tough time with both those things, Memphis has. And while, yes, Golden State may not have the name value that a Marc Gasol and a Zach Randolph have, they do have guys that can they can go small with Draymond if they want. Andrew Bogut is no chum either. Maurice Spates off the bench. So they're a team that's... And with no Mike Connolly, really...
That Memphis could be the X factor.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
That's a huge loss for them. I look at point guards always, and I've talked about it on the show before. It's kind of like the general out there on the floor. They run the floor. And to lose a guy like Connolly for Memphis, You know, their front court is obviously strong with Zebo and Gasol. When you lose a guy like Conley who kind of offsets that, I think it really messes with the flow of your team. I'm not going to sit here and say I know what the bench is like on Memphis. I don't know who's going to fill in for a guy like Conley and if that person can step up or not. But I think Golden State takes that one fairly easily, like you said, AK. Mm-hmm. In terms of to step back into the first round, a couple series still going. The LA Clippers San Antonio series has been awesome. We've talked about it already.
Best series.
And I'm excited to watch the game tonight. I would love to see the Spurs advance. I think that would be a great matchup for them. Next round, they would face Houston, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yep.
So I think the Spurs are always built to make a deep run. It's exciting to see that team always back in it. I love Pop. Kawhi Leonard, you know, he brings players out of nowhere and makes them stars. So
defensive player of the year for sure. I mean, I have loved that series so far. I mean, Duncan is such a talent still. 21 points, 11 rebounds in the last game, and
impressive.
Patty Mills off the bench, like their reserves. Yeah. And that's the thing with
Pop.
He is so talented at developing not only his starters but his bench. I mean, Patty Mills, Ginobili, they have obviously contributed huge off the bench, and I think that's what the Clippers lack. I mean, Griffin, he plays full 40 minutes, always, you know, either makes the time or runs close to it. And so they've kind of exposed the Clippers' weakness in that. And even Rivers, Doc Rivers has said that the Spurs are the best team that they've faced. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. If it goes to a game seven, I still think the Spurs will take it.
That could easily be a West Finals matchup, honestly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in terms of how that series ends up, I think it probably ends tonight. I think San Antonio finishes in game six.
Agreed.
But I just want to highlight one play because I think this is the third show in a row that I've sung the Spurs praises, but I can't do it enough because there was one play at the end of the game where I believe it was, and this was after an alley-oop. It was a Chris Paul assist, or he threw the ball to Blake Griffin, and then he threw the ball up for DeAndre Jordan, and he put Duncan in a situation where he had to choose either, you know, come up and meet Griffin or stay on DeAndre Jordan, which, whether you're 39 years old or 29 years old, it's not an easy decision to make. And, you know, that ended up, it turned into a bit of a Clippers run. And near the end of the game, Tim Duncan, faced with almost the same situation, I remember watching the game and seeing him. It was 2-on-1, essentially 2-on-1, and Tim Duncan holds back DeAndre Jordan and at the same time with his right hand blocks the teardrop shot from Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it is unbelievable how good this guy – I mean, this guy was on the verge of retiring last year because, I mean, who wouldn't want to retire after winning their fifth championship? But
he
just – it's mesmerizing to see this guy play and to play at such an elite level
at
this age.
He continues to impress. We talked about him last week, and a guy like Tim Duncan, he's, you know, a bona fide first ballot Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
He's just so steady, you know, the big fundamental, but in other ways, like, just constantly solid. And what I wanted to mention and what I realized when we were talking about this series is the Clippers all of a sudden just are starting to remind me of the San Jose Sharks. They're starting to remind me of teams that perform amazing during the regular season, and then when there's a little bit of adversity, they start to crumble.
If you remember, Dwayne and I wrote them off. We didn't think this series would go more than five games. So, I mean, the Clippers have shown me something.
Yeah.
This series, they've shown some fight back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ultimately for me, they just don't have the depth.
Mm-hmm. And I think a good example of that is DeAndre Jordan. I mean, they were purposely fouling him so he would shoot, or lack thereof, from the free throw line. So I think, and you know, with DeAndre Jordan, going back to what you were saying, Dwayne, I mean, he looked up to Tim Duncan. He said that himself. And so, like you said, he's kind of an example of the San Jose Sharks, or that DeAndre Jordan is that player where, you know, he's amazing in the key, he's amazing defensively, but when it comes down to it, when the pressure's on him at the line, he can't do it. And I think that's kind of where the Clippers are at.
I describe DeAndre Jordan as an amazing fantasy basketball player. He puts up blocks, he got all kinds of boards, his field goal percentage is through the roof, but when you need a player to be clutch and you need a guy to do a simple thing like hit a free throw, he's not there for you.
That'd kill your free throw percentage.
A perfect example, though. He was amazing in the regular season. Mm-hmm. Any kind of adversity, he crumbles. So when you're telling me you're going to take Tim Duncan or DeAndre Jordan, I think that's like my 5-year-old sister would know who to take there.
Exactly, for sure.
So. Does it matter what seed they are? I mean, the Spurs? No. Like, yeah, they're no. six. No. Does Never. It matter? Like, how not are they not the not favorite? I mean, I look at them every year and I'm like, you just can't doubt them. They're so good every year when it counts.
Exactly. Right. That's what the Raptors are lacking, so.
Yeah, they could definitely use a couple of those players. But
for sure.
Speaking of things that involve a lot of fight, a lot of punchback. Guys, wait. I heard there might be a little scuttlebutt going on.
Something you mean this weekend in Vegas?
A Donnybrook, if you will. I think there's something going on this weekend in Las Vegas, Nevada.
There might be many prizes.
I heard that there is a country called the Philippines shutting down.
Wow,
the streets.
Stacey, why don't we jump right into it and talk to us about, you know, we're obviously talking about the Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather championship bout this Saturday, MGM Grand, Las Vegas, Nevada. It doesn't get any bigger than this, sports fans. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you don't even need to be a sports fan to get excited about something like this. You know, we talked about the NFL draft being a spectacle. This is truly a spectacle of sport. We also have, we don't need to get into it, the Kentucky Derby this weekend, another similar spectacle of sport. Not on the same grand stage, but still. This fight is being billed as the fight of the century, and there's been more buzz around this than I can't remember any other sporting event, not even a Super Bowl garnering this much media attention, fan attention. You know, you have 10-year-old kids who have no idea who a boxer is anymore who are going to watch this fight. So, and I know you're excited, Stacey. Let's hear it.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, I'm a Filipino descent. I'm proud Canadian, born and raised.
Yeah.
Proud Torontonian. But obviously, you know that I'm cheering for Pac-Man over money.
Of course.
But let's talk about money first of all. We already know that this fight is literally going to be the fight of the millennium just because of what it's ranking in. At a pay-per-view price of $100, if
the money is
3 million people alone watch it, that's $300 million, and that's just from pay-per-view. Ticket sales, I mean, you've seen them on StubHub, you've seen them everywhere. There's tickets selling for $42,000.
Average minimum price right now on StubHub for a ticket to this fight is $7,000, with ringside seats going for scalpers starting at $100,000 per ticket. And that's on the strip in Vegas, but
that might be worth more than our studio. Like, and buddy, our school, and just one everything.
One seat is way more than the studio
combined.
Worth.
Just Sports from the Six, high tech. Shout out to all the high tech.
Like, to give you the insight into where we're sitting, guys, this is not a glamorous thing. We come out here and do this for you, so just know that, you know, there's no snacks. There's no. I'm not getting a massage right now or anything. You know, I'm out here grinding, taking the bus. I got a $3 scratch ticket here, and it's a loser. So, you know, I'm just here for you guys, and I'm really excited for this fight. I might have to even throw a little wager on it. Who knows? We were talking about the odds, though. Floyd Mayweather is still a solid favorite at this point.
So right now, Mayweather is 8-15 favorite to win the fight from the perimeter, whereas Pacquiao is at 7-4, and a draw is 18-1. But let me say that Pacquiao does have a higher knockout percentage.
Yep.
And so if he wins in a knockout, Pacquiao's favorite is 5-1, whereas Mayweather's is 7-1. So
yeah, and you know what? It's... And we talked about it before the show. I can't sit here and pretend that I know about the technical side of boxing, but I do know that these two fighters bring in two different styles of fighting, and it's going to be in a very exciting match to watch. And if I'm spending $100 to watch a boxing match that's tops going to go an hour and a half, I'm hoping for a really good fight, guys, and it better be entertaining.
So before we get into the actual technique, into what and you know, the reasons why one or the other might win, and let's maybe go back and like talk about some of the complications before that you know, delayed this fight and made sure that it didn't happen earlier, because there are some people who said that this should have happened 5 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever. But I don't know, Stacey, do you want to talk about some of the reasons why we haven't had this fight until now?
Just so we're clear, Stacey is the pro, the veteran on this topic, so she's going to be giving you hardcore facts.
I mean, I was raised, my dad, I mean, I was a tomboy, so I was raised on basketball and boxing, so so everyone that doesn't know, in December 2007, Ricky Hatton, who is a famous British fighter, Mayweather actually beat him for the welterweight title with a total knockout in the 10th round. And then 6 months later, in June 2008, Mayweather announced his retirement on a perfect record, 39 wins. While he retired, Pacquiao actually moved from lightweight to welterweight. And that may not seem like a huge thing, but to gain that kind of muscle and to train to advance in weight is huge in boxing.
Yeah.
And so he won against Oscar De La Hoya, who's one of the most famous fighters, in a total knockout as well in the eighth round. And then he went on to beat Ricky Hatton on May 2nd, 2009, which is actually funny because May 2nd, 2009 is what? The six-year anniversary of that fight where he knocked him out. And on that same day, of course, in true money fashion, Mayweather announced that he would fight Marquez. So, I mean, to take away from any glory that Pacquiao humbly accepted, of course, Mayweather announced his comeback. So,
right.
And on November 14th, 2009, Pacquiao actually knocked Miguel Cotto in 12 rounds to win the WBO welterweight title. I was actually there for that fight, and let me tell you, not at the actual fight. I had to watch from the outside because those tickets were going for $5,000. So, but that fight, I think that was Pacquiao's prime. I mean, he was unstoppable at that point.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning. The initial negotiations were set after that fight. There was supposed to be the fight in March 2010, but I think Ali can speak to this as well, that Pacquiao supposedly did not agree to Mayweather's drug testing standards.
Yep, Olympic-style drug testing.
Mm-hmm. And then that was kind of the spiral, the downward spiral of the drama that ensued, from trash talking to lawsuits. And during that time, both of them actually had very prolific fights. So Mayweather fought Cotto as well.
Big fight. Mosley,
Guerrero, Maidana, Alvarez. Whereas Pacquiao fought Bradley, which to this day, I think that first fight was so rigged. I have to say. I mean.
We don't need to get into the mafia.
Yeah, and Timothy Bradley at that time.
They could have been involved in that fight.
Yeah. Flip every single week. Every week.
Look, there's evidence across the board, okay, guys? I don't want to get into it.
For obvious
reasons. Well, like we said, there's nothing that they're going to gain from coming in this booth except for getting yelled at by the guy who gets mad that we drink water.
So then the Filipinos, the Filipino mafia came together and made sure
you dropped a comment. But I think, you know what, in terms of, and you brought it up as how big of a deal this fight is. You know, we can talk about the nitty-gritty details, and the build-up to the fight has been huge. And it's taken multiple years, and the fight is multiple years in the making, and I think that is part of what makes it so exciting is it's finally here. These guys are going to scrap it out on Saturday, and we're going to finally know who is the best fighter of this generation because, like I said, I don't know the history of boxing very well, but all I know is there hasn't been this much hype around a boxing event since something Mike Tyson was involved in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even taking it further, people are comparing a fight of this magnitude to the Thriller in Manila, 1975.
Right. Yeah.
Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how big it's got. And people are also behind Pacquiao as well. Mike Tyson, George Foreman. These are guys that have come out and given their support for Manny Pacquiao. And we talk about the money. Yes, this didn't happen because of the money and some of the money demands. There is no way that even 3 or 5 years ago, this fight generates this kind of money that it's making for Vegas. It is a sports. This is bigger than sports here.
Yeah, right it's. You know, we've talked about things transcending the sport. This is transcending the sport. This is reaching all kinds of avenues that, you know, it just brings attention to boxing. And Stacey brought it up how boxing is, you know, it is still relevant, but in terms of when you talk about major sports, it's not on the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that brings it to the forefront. No one else is talking about anything else. Saturday night, no one's going to be watching anything except for this fight.
Agreed.
And it's just, you know what? Pacquiao's a champion on 8 different divisions.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, he's elected to the House of Representatives in the Philippines.
Yeah.
The story for him is so likable. And then on the other side, you have Mayweather. You have a guy posting videos of him being bathed on Instagram. You have his mouthpiece has got a $30,000 worth of G notes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like this guy, I want to smack him in the head, but I'm not going to go out and call him out like Paul Pierce because this guy would probably beat the living you know what out of me. So we're going to cut it at that.
Yeah.
But with that being said, my gut says Mayweather wins this fight. My betting mind says he wins this fight, but in terms of who I want to win, I want Pacquiao to win because honestly, I think Floyd Mayweather's a bit of a goof.
Yeah,
personally.
And I look at the two different styles. The way Pacquiao fights, he is an aggressive fighter. Mm-hmm. And Mayweather's pretty much the opposite. He's a guy that relies on defense. He relies on pace of the fight. It's going to come down to those early rounds for me. Can Pacquiao establish a pace and really get those jabs in early? Can he weaken Mayweather early? Because if not, if this is going 12 rounds, I mean, I feel like it's going to be tough then for Pacquiao to come through. Both these guys now are older guys, 36 and 38 respectively. So, and they haven't had knockouts since 2009. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a while. You see the fight going the distance. I hope that it does live up to the hype. But honestly, these are both champions, legendary champions in their respective fields. And it's going to be great for sports fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
go ahead, Stacey.
I mean, obviously, I'm a Pacquiao fan, but Mayweather is obviously one of the best fighters, number two best fighter in the world. but like you said,
there's no bias here at all.
Like you said, Mayweather. I mean, they're older gentlemen now. I mean, in his last fight with Maidana in last year, Mayweather was hit a record 221 times.
Yeah, that's very important that you brought that up.
I think. And I think that with Pacquiao, people always say that money is very fast, whereas Pac-Man, he is just as fast. He outputs high activity, whether it be his jabs, his feet work. He's a toe-to-toe fighter. He's also southpaw, which for those that don't
makes it difficult.
It makes it difficult for money because
the lefty.
The lefty, exactly. So I think I completely agree with Ali. I hope it goes full 12 rounds. But Pacquiao has relentless pressure, and if he gets those jabs in, those reverses, those undercuts, and is able to, you know, hit Mayweather more than he anticipates, then
he's gonna have to get to him early.
Yeah, exactly. I think that that Pacquiao has a fighting chance.
Yeah, and I will say this: the book on Mayweather has been that he's been very adaptable. So yes, Pacquiao is a southpaw, but I mean, there's a reason why Mayweather's undefeated, and we're gonna get to see those two styles compare and contrast this weekend. Not to mention, of course, the whole nation is behind Pacquiao. So, I mean, just to see the kind of fan reaction this is getting, like Flip said, you don't need to be a boxing fan. You just need to be really a fan of anything. Just in general, you're going to come out and you're going to pay attention to something this big.
Oh, no question. And the thing is, like, some of the main reasons, I mean, we don't have to get into the specifics, but I mean, other than the brashness of money, I mean, he's not the greatest guy to be around. I mean, we know about some of the criminal elements of his past, and I mean, he's not a great guy. And I mean, everybody
he's coming into the ring with Justin Bieber. How good of a guy can he be?
I mean,
like, come on, who's he coming in with this time?
I'm gonna tell you one time.
Sorry, not to cut you off there.
So there's no question that, I mean, people, fans, they would love to see Pacquiao win. I mean, they're more cheering for him, and I think in their heart they want Pacquiao to win.
Yeah, I think he's the people's choice, you can fair to say.
And call him the people's champion, actually.
Wow.
Call him that, yeah.
Yes.
Is that in the Philippines or here too?
Everywhere.
Wow.
Bias.
Anyone quick predictions?
Wherever Stacey is.
I think before we wrap it up, Dwayne, you want to finish that off there?
Yeah, so I just wanted to say, I mean, so just to play off of some of the stuff that you guys have been saying, I mean, Ali brought it up. Pac-Man, he's an aggressive fighter. You know, he's gonna be always looking for that opportunity to use that left arm. He's gonna be counter punching anything that Mayweather throws his way. He's gonna use that speed, that combination punching that he has, and his quick feet, like Stacey mentioned, to be able to get ahead of him. And who knows, maybe that wears down Mayweather at the end, and he's just going to be looking for that opportunity to use that left hand and maybe possibly knock it. I mean, a knockout might be kind of wishing for too much, but who knows. And then in terms of money, I mean, it's that counterpunching that I just mentioned. He's going to be using a lot of that. He's going to be – we brought up the fact that he's a very defensive fighter.
Yep.
Though we talked off air, Stacey brought up a good point that he's been taking actually a lot more hits recently in his fights. So he might not have that same – tenacity in terms of decency that he used to have. So
that's fair, though. It's a valid point, and I think it just adds to the intrigue of this fight. And you make an excellent point there. And I think before we wrap up and let you guys get back to it quickly, let's run through the table here. Let's have the winner of the fight and the type of win. Why don't you start it off, AK?
I actually think it's going to go the distance. I'm one of those. I don't think there's going to be a knockout.
Just that's fair.
The law of averages says that it's not going to happen.
12 rounds.
You know what? My heart is going here for Manny Pacquiao. I want to see that that undefeated streak end. But
here we go. Who's gonna win? I didn't ask for your life story here, bud.
I think we're gonna see Mayweather come out of this one.
Thank you, Stace.
Well, I don't know if my choice is obvious, but
it's okay. That's fine.
I honestly think that Pacquiao has it in him. He's the people's champ for a reason. He has relentless pressure. He will come toward Mayweather with fists of fury. And I think that if he does have that economic output in his punches, he'll be able to wear him out. I mean, because you have to consider that it's not just about knockouts. It's about points as well. How many punches?
For sure.
Get.
Yeah.
And I think 100%. That Pacquiao's ready for this fight. If he lands, you know, five punches, whereas Mayweather kind of strategically thinks about, you know, the one that he wants to land to knock him out, so to speak. I still think that Pacquiao wins in both respects. And yes, Mayweather has a lot on the line. He has an undefeated record. He's gone on to say that he has one more fight in him. But Rocky Marciano, he has an unbeaten record of 45 for any history. 49 for any history buff. So I think that Mayweather has, I'd say, two fights, just to be fair. So there's definitely going to be a rematch regardless of the outcome.
But so you're taking Pac-Man.
Pacquiao, for sure.
Dwayne.
Right, so I'm going to say I'm with Stacey on this one. I think Pac-Man pulls it out.
Yes.
Wow.
I think that
Mayweather, you guys are sharing a mic.
Hey man, we're the dynamic duo over here.
It's on my side.
My pick is to come.
Yeah, so I mean, I just think that Mayweather's impenetrable defense, I don't think it's there anymore, and I think that Pacquiao finds a way to exploit it, and I agree with Ali. I think that it does go the distance, and I just think that he takes it by a decision. So and I also agree with Stacey in the fact that I think there definitely will be a rematch because...
Yeah, there's too much money.
And she brought up the whole undefeated record. Mayweather has a lot going on the line, so I can't wait for this. What do you think, Flip?
It's going to go the 12 rounds. You guys are right there. I can't disagree with you. I'm going to take Floyd Mayweather to win this fight.
Money!
And I'm going to take it in a unanimous decision. I think that as much as I know Pacquiao's going to come prepared, I know he's going to give it his all and he's going to be ready. Mayweather has more on the line. He's got more to lose. In my mind, that should make you more hungry to win. And in a sport like boxing, I think that competitive edge is something that could push him over the top. With that being said, it's going to be hopefully a close bout, but I think Mayweather takes it unanimously.
So
but
just to let everyone know, it's 2-2 in terms of prediction. Correct split.
We're gonna continue to keep a running track of who does well with their predictions. And speaking of keeping track, please keep track with us. Continue to listen. We appreciate all the support as always. We've just recently passed 5,000 plays, and we'd be nowhere with all the support of our friends and fam. So as always, thank you very much. Always a great time to be joined by my co-hosts, Ali Khanrav, Johnny, and Dwayne Turner. And today, our behind-the-scenes champion, Stacy, the people's champ of the Philippines. Thank you for hopping on today, and thank you for talking boxing. Hopefully something to add a little intrigue to our listeners. Thank you very much, guys.